This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us a fascinating author. He's written a book called The Tragic Indifferent: One's Man Battled with the Automobile Industry Over the Danger of SUVs. Our author is Adam Pennenberg. Mr. Pennenberg, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so very much for being with us. And I'd seen this book advertised in one of the newspapers I read, at least a book review of it. And I thought it was an interesting subject. After having read the book, I find it's even more fascinating. And, of course, it's the story of a Tab Taylor, who I guess it was, what, Clyde Taylor?
Tab Turner.
Okay, yes. Mr. Turner was the lawyer who really made the life of our major automobile industries miserable, but he really didn't do that after a certain point for money. He did it to try to get them to do what they should have done, and that was protect the lives of the American people, because they knew that their cars, specifically the Ford Bronco and the Ford Explorer and others, were dangerous. They knew they were going to tip over, and they just figured that they'd pay off the few people who bothered to sue and then go merrily along the way with their profits. Why don't you pick up the story of Tragic Indifference? Because it's infuriating to think we would have people this callous and crass running our major corporations today.
Yes, well, you know, obviously, few people like trial lawyers. I mean, they're probably the most despised group of people in America next to journalists like myself. So, you know, when I started researching this book, I found it really interesting that in essence, what we've ended up doing, because the government is failing to regulate certain industries, for example, the automobile industry, it's really taking trial lawyers who are suing the automobile makers like Ford over the Bronco and especially over the Ford Explorer to make changes, because they're making it too expensive for Ford to continue on with business as usual. And so the man I wrote about is Tab Turner. He's a Little Rock attorney. He's been suing Ford for about 15 years, and over the course of those years, he has settled more than $1 billion in cases against Ford alone. Now think about that number. I mean, this is the amount of money that Ford has had to pay out to settle cases in which somebody was in a Ford Bronco or a Ford Explorer, they rolled over, and their lives were either ended or they were crippled. And this has happened time and time again. And in fact, it reads like the same horror movie script over and over again when you read these accident reports.
And of course, the interesting thing was that they knew this was going to happen. And they just weren't about to even reinforce the roof to protect the people. They just figured most people would never bother to sue, or if they did sue, they had smart enough lawyers to trick them or to discourage them or to drag the cases on and on and on, and then appeal the cases afterwards. And they were never expecting to run into somebody with the tenacity of Mr. Turner.
This is correct, I think, because the problem is, the Ford Explorer, as shown by Ford's own internal documents, its engineers knew that the Ford Bronco and then subsequently the Ford Explorer was unstable. And these same engineers made certain recommendations for changes to the Bronco and then again the Explorer. And the problem is that Ford decided, we're just going to put a cabin on top of a pickup truck suspension system, and we're going to sell it to the American people. And
hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Pennenberg. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Adam Pennenberg. We're talking about a book called Tragic Indifference. It's a book about suing Ford and General Motors and other automobile companies, but primarily Ford and Firestone Tires, because the two of them were in this together. And they were totally callous and indifferent towards a problem that they knew was very real, and that was that the SUVs, first the Bronco 2 and then the Explorer, had a very real danger of tipping over, and of course they really did not care. They figured that they would just be able to get away with this, and that they would have to pay a certain number of shoots out, and as the number of fatalities kept increasing and increasing and increasing, they refused to do anything about it, to recall the cars, to recognize or warn people. They put a little warning on the back side of the visor saying, your vehicle may tip over. Most people don't look on the back side of the visor, and when they look at it, they probably don't pay much attention to it. But this was built into the very structure of this because the center of gravity was too high. Why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, actually, you know what? I'll let the statistics do the talking for me. For example, and these are statistics that come from the federal government, and based on Ford's own statistics as well. But if you do the numbers, you will find out that one in every 2,700 Ford Explorers built between 1990 and 2001 has suffered a fatal rollover. That means that somebody was driving down the road, and for whatever reason, the tire blew, or they were avoiding a cow in the road, the driver steered the wheel and all of a sudden ended up on the roof, and the roof crushed in and either killed someone, actually killed somebody. In the case of the Ford Bronco, the numbers are even more outrageous. The numbers are one in every 500 Ford Bronco 2s that rolled off the assembly lines has been in a fatal rollover accident.
And that was just not just an accident, because a lot of rollovers might not be fatal. This was one in 500 chance. If you had a Ford Bronco, you were going to die, or somebody was going to die in that car. When I read that statistic, I thought, you know, would anybody in their right mind buy a car when they knew that you had a one in 500 chances of dying in that car because of faulty construction? Ford Motor Company knew that there were these very real possibility, and the people in key positions said, what we'll do is we'll just put less air in the tires, and maybe that way why they won't be so prone to roll over. But the trouble was that then, of course, the tread continued to come off.
Exactly, because that was the case with the Ford Explorer. They lowered the air pressure after the, you know, diabolical experiment with the Ford Bronco.
Hold here. Well, Dr. Stanton back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Adam Pennenberg, and he's written a fascinating story, and it reads almost like an adventure novel, only the tragedy is it's very, very real, and the people you're reading about could be your neighbors, about what happened to the people who bought these cars, and they were known to be unsafe. You know, it's one thing, I've dealt with trial attorneys, I've been a professional witness, and I know how they will try to get you to twist the testimony when you go on the stand. But I would never do that, even though I was paid to be on the stand. You go there, you're going to tell the truth. And I thought it was really so interesting. One point, you told about how Mr. Turner had one of the people, I think he was getting $4,000 an hour to testify. And he said, now, is it true that you've made an agreement with the with Ford Motor Company that you will testify and color your testimony? And the man said, of course not. Of course I wouldn't do. I mean, how can you even suggest that? And he didn't know that Mr. Turner had a letter in his pocket. Do you want to tell that story? I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of it, of your saga.
Yes, the person you're talking about is a man named David Bickerstaff, who was a lead Ford engineer for the Ford Bronco. And Mr. Bickerstaff and his engineer buddies at Ford urged the company in numerous memos to change certain aspects of the Ford Bronco. They wanted it wider, they wanted it lower, and they wanted a different suspension system, not based on the pickup truck. And Ford management told them, no thanks, we'd rather meet job one and get the car out on the market as soon as possible, and they rejected these changes. Subsequent to that, David Bickerstaff quit Ford and went to become a professional witness for Ford. And Mr. Bickerstaff had written a letter to Ford, basically Ford attorneys, telling them that in order to color his testimony, quote, in Ford's favor, unquote, he would require $4,000 a day. And in a trial, which ended up in a huge verdict against Ford, and which Mr. Tab Turner, the lawyer I wrote about, was the lawyer conducting it, he cross-examined Mr. Bickerstaff and asked him, if he had ever agreed to testify in Ford's behalf and in Ford's favor for money. And Mr. Bickerstaff said no, and so Tab Turner unveiled the letter. He actually blew it up to the size of a door, and to add insult to injury, he had Mr. Bickerstaff get up and take a pointer and underline in Ford's favor over and over again. And Ford lost $25 million verdict in that case, and the jury found that the Ford Bronco was unreasonably dangerous.
And, of course, somebody had sent a copy of the letter to Turner. Maybe it was a wife. Apparently there was perhaps a divorce going on, but somebody had actually sent the copy of this letter.
Exactly.
And with that, of course, they broke the back of Ford, because now they have established the precedent not only that the car was unsafe, but Ford knew it was unsafe, and this was the lead designer, and he had told them it was unsafe. And once, of course, he had committed perjury, then, of course, he was a very, very willing witness.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly true. And what's interesting, Mr. Bickerstaff had testified in a number of Ford Bronco cases, and after this trial in which Tab Turner gained a $25 million verdict, Mr. Bickerstaff was taken to task by a judge who found his behavior reprehensible and Ford's behavior reprehensible in this case, and it affected a lot of cases in which Ford had either won, or they had four settlements when it looked like the jury might be a hung jury or whatever, because when you sue Ford and you win in court and win a verdict, you don't really win, because they'll just lock you up in appeal for 10 years and not pay you and force you to settle for a scant amount at the very end, which is what they did in that particular case.
But these, really what happens, you go up against a major corporation that's got a stable of lawyers that have no sense of right and wrong, that will lie and cheat and withhold evidence. And apparently in these cases, why Ford was supposed to submit information, and they would submit 40 boxes of information with nothing in it, maybe one or two pieces that were worthwhile, simply to bury a Mr. Turner in the paperwork. And then they would hold all the really important information to the last day, just before the trial, and they bring in another 15 boxes. They're feeling he's no way he can go through this. So why don't you tell some of those stories?
Well, that's very true. I mean, with Tab Turner, in fact, he was asked by the Senate to go through boxes of documents before hearings on Ford and Firestone back in August of 2000, or September 2000. And when he went through the boxes, he found, you know, he'd have to dig through boxes and boxes and boxes. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. 40 boxes of material filled with dense engineer speak. But since Tab Turner had been suing Ford for so long, he had a lot of these documents already, and he knew what they meant, and he could read them quickly. And so he was able to help the Senate investigators find the number of documents they needed to conduct proper hearings, which he did. I mean, another thing that Ford did with the Bronco, which is, again, unconscionable, was that they, before they released the car to the general public, the lawyers at Ford went through and collected all possible documents pertaining to the Ford Bronco II in anticipation of litigation. And, in fact, they admitted this, and then they lost 50 of them. So we don't even know what those documents say. And, in fact, the retention manual, which states what Ford's policies are in retaining documents, that too was shredded.
Well, of course, weren't some of the judges just a little incensed at what was going on?
Yes, they are, but I mean, you know, when you're fighting a corporation, you're fighting a corporation, you're not fighting an individual, and so, you know, they take glancing blows. So if a judge finds their behavior reprehensible or finds their conduct to be negligent or criminal, it's not like you can pin it on one person. It's a systemic problem at Ford. You can't just point to the CEO and go, he's at fault.
Well, I think he should be at fault, because Truman said, you know, the buck stops at the top. But they always pass it down, so you can't get anybody for criminal activity, despite the fact that they know that they're going to kill people. And I thought that one figure for the Bronco was frightening. Bronco,
true, because if you had 1 in 500 cans of Coca-Cola was poisoned, you know, you'd have a public health safety emergency. But if you have 1 in 500 Ford Bronco tools roll over and kill one of the occupants, you know, if you're Ford Motor Company, you merrily collect your profits and go on your merry way, and you settle these cases quietly and seal the documents in court so that people don't know about it.
Well, now, one of the other problems that they had was Ford had an accelerator, and sometimes you'd step, you'd press on the accelerator, and the car would just jump forward in at full speed, and the brakes wouldn't work, and they were just running into things, and they'd say, well, oh, those poor old people, they probably were pressing on the accelerator. They thought it was the brake, and they tried to pass this off, despite the fact that they knew it was a real endemic problem within the mechanism of the car. Would you like to talk about that?
Sure. I mean, what Ford would do is, this is called sudden acceleration, and a lot of people think it's a myth, but, you know, because it sounds like a ghost has taken over your car. Doesn't it sound crazy that all of a sudden you're idling and all of a sudden your car shoots to 60 miles an hour? It does sound crazy, except that Ford has been forced to recall a number of their vehicles for sudden acceleration because the cruise control, for some reason, would all of a sudden slip on while you were idling. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. And Ford, you know, has never admitted to sudden acceleration, and yet they've cited sudden acceleration as a reason for a number of recalls.
And what has happened is they've actually had to recall literally millions of cars because they were made imperfectly. And the tragedy was that many times they knew they were made imperfectly, and they really didn't care. That's the subject of your title, Tragic Indifference.
Exactly. These companies were tragically indifferent to its consumers. I mean, they created products that they knew were faulty or defective or had major problems, and instead of fixing the problems, found that it would be too expensive, and so they released the products to the public anyway. It's like the Ford Pinto over and over again. You would think that Ford would have learned, but they didn't. The one thing they did learn is they don't have the one damning document that the Ford Pinto had, which was a cost-benefit analysis comparing lives to the cost of fixing the problem.
And for our listeners who don't know, if you got in a Ford Pinto and you got hit from the rear, why many times it would explode, it was the gas tank was too close to the back and it would crack, and then it would... car would go up in a sheet of flame, and this was showed apparently on television very, very dramatically. What was so interesting, apparently one of Mr. Turner's cases, he had somebody from the Ford Motor Company on there, and he used the analogy, well, you know, you say that Ford would never put out a car that they knew was unsafe. What about the Ford Pinto? I want to tell that story. I thought it was so interesting because he was such a shrewd lawyer. He knew how to play the jury, and somebody has to do what the government refuses to do.
Exactly. I mean, I would like to think that this book combines the best of nonfiction with fiction in the sense of, you know, I love John Grisham and books like that. And one of my favorite books of all time is A Civil Action, which I think is a terrific narrative nonfiction. And, you know, Tragic Indifference tells the story of Tab Turner, who is a lawyer much in the same mold as these characters, who is fighting a David and Goliath battle against the Ford Motor Company. Tab Turner has been fighting for years to get the companies to change, you know, their ways. And an interesting fact is that you mentioned the Ford Pinto blowing up when you strike it from behind, but even today, the Ford Crown Victoria, which is a police car sedan used in Arizona and a lot of other places, has the same problem because Ford put the fuel tank outside the bottom frame. And if you're struck at 60 or 70 miles an hour, and which state troopers are often on highways, so this is what happens, the car turns into an inferno. And there have been 13 cases across the country in which policemen have died because of this.
Well, the thing was that when Mr. Turner brought this up at the trial, and of course the fellow from Ford couldn't very well come out and say that Ford had turned out a defective product, and so of course there was nothing wrong with Pinto. Well, everybody in the audience knew there was something wrong with Pinto. That discredited him and was really the turning point in the trial, wasn't it?
It was, and what's funny is the man that was testifying on behalf of Ford was a former head of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
And I think one of the points you make is that we have sort of a rotating system. You work for the government and you give the motor companies every break possible, and then you get a nice plus job with the motor companies right afterwards, or with some other organization that they subsidize. It really gives corruption a bad name. We'll be back here in just a few minutes here at Radio Liberty.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamax, the new odorless, 100% pure Allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamax is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh, crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamax. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me tell you about a few of the things we carry here. We carry the big Berkey water filters, and if you're going to be at our conference tomorrow out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, we're going to have a copy of the Berkey light there. Of course, we can't sell the big Berkey in California because, our regulators up there in Sacramento are so interested in protecting your health. Well, the big Berkey has been used for 150 years by missionaries throughout the world to filter water out of ponds and lakes and rivers, and it's simply made of stainless steel. And water goes in the top, goes through ceramic filters, packed with activated carbon, comes out the bottom, and you've removed almost all of the pesticides and herbicides and chlorine taste and the bacteria, and you've got potable water. But for some reason or other, the local officials don't like that. So whatever the reason would be, the Big Berkey is not available in California or Iowa. It's available in all the other states, 48 other states, but we can't sell it to you here in California. The Big Berkey is $239.95, and if you're out across America, you can buy it. You just can't buy it here in California. If you buy it through us, you get a four-tape set or a video that we produced free of charge. Now, here in California, you can get the Berkey light, and we'll have one there tomorrow at the conference, and you'll see it. It's made of Lexite, so you can actually see the water levels. The filters are much more efficient. We call them the Black Berkey water purifiers. They do a better job than a regular filter does, and it does a great job of removing the herbicides and pesticides and the things you want to get out. Now, it does not remove fluoride. If you want to get fluoride out, you can get special filters that do that. It takes fluoride and arsenic and MTBE out, although the Berkey light filters, the Black Berkey filters, do a real good job on taking MTBE out. And initially they do with fluoride, but after a time, they're not so efficient. So we recommend you get your independent or so-called post filters with us. The Berkey light is $199.95 plus shipping. And if you buy it through us, you can get a free video or a four-tape set. And Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And if you do order those items through us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our guest this afternoon is Adam Pennenberg. His book, Tragic and Different, One Man's Battle with the Auto Industry Over the Dangers of SUVs. Now, the hero of the book, and he's a real live hero, he's a attorney in Little Rock, Arkansas, Tab Turner, has more money than he'd ever spent in his lifetime, and he's not doing what he's doing for the money at all. He's doing this because somebody has to force the automotive companies to do what's right, because there's a sweetheart relationship between the National Highway Traffic Safety Board and the auto industry, and they just sort of look after one another. And as it's been said, you know, you just work for the government, and then you get a real nice job working for the automobile industry afterwards, if, of course, you've done the proper sort of activity when you're working for the government. The same thing happens with the FDA. It happens at every level of our government. Professor Quigley talks about that in his book, Tragedy and Hope, how they, you know, if you go along, you'll get along very, very well when you retire with a well-paying job. That's on page 324 of his book, Tragedy and Hope. And remember, Professor Quigley was Bill Clinton's mentor. He told Bill Clinton exactly how the system works. Well, if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, one of the other culprits were the Firestone Tire Company, because they were making really very inferior tires. They were using a car tire on these very, very heavy vehicles. Would you like to tell that story? Because here again, why we see this tragic indifference.
Yes, well, first of all, I'd like to ask people if they'd like to learn more about this, they can come to my website.
Okay.
Which is www.penenberg.com. That's P-E-N-E-N-B-E-R-G. And hopefully they'll be able to check out and find out more information about the book if they so choose. Firestone's pretty interesting because, you know, the Ford company and Firestone had a relation that dated back 100 years. And in fact, Henry Ford and Harvey Firestone were really good buds and, you know, met each other at the turn of the century, or even before the turn of the century, and I mean the last century. You know, these companies had had a very close relationship for years, and in fact, even after Firestone was sold to Japanese tire maker Bridgestone in 1988, they continued to have a very close relationship. And Ford, you know, in the 90s, increasingly pushed for a more bottom-line approach to their business. And in fact, one internal document that Ford had said that the cost of a tire isn't what it costs to make, it's how much we're willing to pay for it. And so they were really squeezing Firestone to produce a lighter and cheaper tire to outfit their 3,000-pound SUV in which families were riding in. They also asked for a passenger car tire instead of a truck tire, because, well, it would help with gas mileage, because the Ford Explorer at the time was getting a measly 12 miles per gallon, and they were convinced, they were concerned about the criticism they were getting for this really horrible gas mileage. And so what they did was Firestone was readily followed suit because, well, they didn't want to lose Ford's business, and also, if you take a pound and a half of rubber and steel out of each tire, and that's what they did, a pound and a half, that would save them something like 70 million pounds of material over the course of the tire run. And so that's a lot of money they were able to save. In addition, Firestone tire workers were forced to speed up their production, and you know, they couldn't possibly produce the tires you know, with quality control. And in fact, quality control went out the window. And so you had a situation where you had bad rubber stock, which was dried out, which was happening a lot, and they, you know, tire maker would have to restore it with these brushes, and they would dip it in this chemical called benzene to restore the rubber, which was against Firestone's own policies, but it was widespread according to several tire makers who worked at Firestone. And in fact, the brushes weren't wide enough to cover the tire, so they'd have to spin the tire twice to cover the whole tire with it, but they couldn't possibly make production. And so a lot of times these tire makers would just swab it once, and so you'd have tires that were coming apart at 70 miles an hour on American highways, and people inside these vehicles would roll over, and these roofs would crush in, and people would be killed.
And basically, a lot of these tires, the tread was just coming off of them, and then they were underinflating the tires because Ford wanted them underinflated. And then, of course, the engineers said, look, let's use a 14-inch tire. It'll lower the center of gravity. Oh, no, we got to use a 15-inch tire. We'll talk about all of these things, but when we get back, if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you want to get your blood pressure up, this is a good book to read. It really makes you realize what we're up against in a nation that has lost its moral sense of conscience, and we put profit way above the value of human life.
laugh at the idea that there is, or has been, secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, Dr. Stan, I want to mention that we do carry here at Radio Liberty something called Phonopoly. And Phonopoly is a program, it's basically a board game played very much like Monopoly, but it's designed to teach you or your children, your grandchildren, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And so many of our children today are not being taught phonics, and as a result, they're using the wrong side of their brain. And you wonder why we have so many children who are illiterate, why our reading scores here in the United States are among the lowest in the world. Didn't happen by accidents. Other countries are training their children how to read phonetically. Here, why we confuse them, we just confuse their minds. Other countries are moving towards excellence in education. We, of course, push mediocrity. Isn't happening by accident. If you'd like to get a Phonopoly set, most programs that teach phonics, $300, $400, $500, $800. This one's $139.95. And we throw in a couple of books. It's 5 board games and 2 bonus games. And we throw in a couple of books along with that to help you understand that what's going on today is not going on by accident, but by intent. And then we also carry something called the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. Professor Robinson and his wife designed this for their 6 children. When Professor Robinson's 2 older boys graduated from high school, they went directly into the 3rd year of college. They were so far ahead of their contemporaries, because most of our children have to take bonehead math and bonehead English. When they get into college, they've been so dumbed down. Well, the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, everything you need to educate your children from grammar school to high school graduation for $199.95 on 22 CDs. The textbooks are there. The only thing you have to buy is the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. What wonderful Christmas gifts for your children. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Adam Pennenberg. His book, Tragic Indifference, and it's a good read. It's put out by HarperCollins. Excellent book, and I'm sure it's available through Barnes & Noble's, or how about Amazon.com? Is it up there?
Oh, sure. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, anywhere books are sold, you should be able to tag down a copy.
All right, and it's well worthwhile. It's a good read, because it almost, in many ways, reads like an adventure story, and it is an adventure story. It's an adventure story of one man willing to do something when everybody else is sitting around doing nothing, or when so many of the lawyers, of course, would send him the case, they'd get a percentage of the take, he'd have to do all the work, but he was willing to do it because somebody had to get to the automobile companies. Now, let's get back into the tires, because this is an incredible story. Didn't they order them to under-inflate the tires, which made them more susceptible to the tread coming off?
Yes, in fact, Ford advised Firestone that it wanted a car tire on an SUV truck, 3,000 pounds, which was marketed to families. And what they asked for was that it be set at 26 pounds per square inch. Now, 26 pounds per square inch is not a lot of inflation. And in fact, you lose 1 pound a month if your car is sitting around. And so what was going on was at this low inflation rate, you get a lot more friction. That makes sense, right? And with more friction, you get heat. And with heat, you get, melted rubber. You get rubber degradation. And what does that mean? The tread would come off at 70 miles an hour. Ford mandated that the PSI be at 26 because they wanted to keep the tires on the road during sharp turns. And they knew that the Ford Explorer, and before that the Ford Bronco, had trouble making even normal turns at high speeds. And so they told Firestone, set the pounds per square inch at 26 PSI, and that'll keep the wheels on the ground. Unfortunately, it led to a number of tread separations in which the tread would just come off the tire. And so you have accident after accident, more than 300 caught, leading to death, accident after accident in which the tread would come off, and yet the tire would remain fully inflated on the car after it rolled over.
Well, it's really an incredible story, and you have to have a truck tire on a truck chassis, because this is really what they were doing. They were building this on a truck chassis. I know my tires take 50 pounds per square inch. It's a GM Suburban, and it is a truck, and you treat it like a truck. And here they're taking the same heavy sort of a vehicle, and they're putting 26 pounds of in there, and they know that this is not even a truck tire.
Exactly, and not just that, but it also had the lowest possible temperature rating of any tire on the market. No other SUV tire had a C rating. They were all B and above. And a C rating, you know, does not fly on roads in California or Florida or Texas summers or Arizona, and that where most of the accidents were occurring were in hot weather states.
So what happened when they went after Firestone and tried to prove that this was a tire that never should have been on that vehicle?
Well, you know, what was funny was that Firestone, had to recall a huge number of tires, and Ford blamed the tire, but Firestone blamed the vehicle. And they got into this, tit-for-tat battle all across the summer of 2000, in which they were blaming each other, and the public really was having a lot of trouble figuring out who was at fault.
They were both at fault, weren't they?
I believe they were both at fault. I mean, it's a bad car, it's a bad tire, and the result is a lethal cocktail in which many people died. And what's really unconscionable to me is, you know, you do, on the driver's side visor, there is a warning that says, you know, this vehicle has an elevated risk of rollover. Don't make any unnecessary sharp turns. For anyone who's driven on American highways, I don't know what an unnecessary sharp turn is. I mean, if a sports car cuts you off, or there's someone in the road, or there's a cow in the road, you're going to have to turn the wheel sharply. And in the case of the Ford Explorer, it's going to flip over on the road. And here's the really horrible part. If you take a Ford Explorer and turned it upside down and lowered it on its roof, it would collapse under its own weight. Now, if you have a vehicle you know has an elevated risk of rollover, how come you don't reinforce the roof?
And they knew that this would happen, and yet they did absolutely nothing. And that's why we have, at least it was, at least with the Bronco 2, 1 in 500 people who had a Bronco 2 would die. Every one of them, 1 in 500 produced, they had a fatal accident. How bad was the rates with the Explorer?
Well, with the rate is 1 in 500 Ford Bronco tools rolled over and killed one
right.
of the occupants. You know, in some of these accidents, more than one occupant died. So the numbers of death is even higher. The number for the Ford Explorer is 1 in every 2,700 Ford Explorers built between 1990 and 2001 has suffered a fatal rollover. There is not another SUV on the market that comes close.
Okay, well, let's
now, you'll notice when Ford responds, they'll say things like, the Ford Explorer has an excellent record with side impact accidents. And that's true, because if you run a little Volkswagen Bug or a Porsche into the side of a Ford Explorer, guess who wins? The Ford Explorer. But when it comes to rollovers, in which 10,000 or more people die every year in rollovers, and they really plague SUVs and, to a lesser extent, pickups, you have a significant problem.
And I love that slogan of theirs. Quality is our job, or job one, something like that. And then,
well, you know what's so funny was the same time they were having that slogan, J.D. Power ranked Ford last in initial quality.
And I think you better understand, this is why Ford is having such real problem and is losing billions of dollars throughout the world every year. So let's go to Ben calling from Salinas. Ben, do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, I do. And one thing I've also noticed, and a lot of those rollover deaths, whole families died, and it's usually like in areas where there's a lot of retirees that buy them for safety purposes. And
yes.
Around Arizona in particular, I noticed Las Vegas, Louisiana, Florida, the retirement belt, where a lot of elderly people, oh, we're safe, it's a big one, we're safe, and whole families have died over going 45, 60 miles an hour, It rolls over the embankment, and not to even to address the issue of when these babies catch on fire. Those
Well, actually, yes. I mean, that happened. In fact, I do a whole chapter on a crash test driver named Mark Arndt, who coincidentally works out of Arizona. And he did a crash test on a Ford Explorer in which they induced a tread separation. So they split the tire so that they knew that the tread would come off at 70 miles an hour. And they landed on an abandoned runway. And this is a crash test driver, and he was expecting the tread to separate, and he wanted to test how far the Ford would pull to the right, you know, or the left, depending on where the tire was. And what happened was that he rolled over and broke an outrigger that was meant to keep the wheels on the ground. And, you know, he almost died. And if he hadn't specially outfitted it with a roll bar, he could have been killed.
And then when they go to court, they make like $35 billion a year producing these vehicles they know to be defective. And here the NTSB is trying to justify the paychecks they're paying to them out of our tax dollars. But yet they make $35 billion, and then when they come out at the end of these cases, oh, we fined them $40 million, because to the average duck, $40 million sounds like a lot of money. But not when you're Ford.
They don't even pay it. I mean,
but they don't pay that, Ben. I'm going to let Alan explain what happens, because they appeal this, and they play all sorts of games with the courts. Why don't you explain what they do with that $40 million or $50 million?
Yeah, the reason that so many cases settle is because no one really wants to go to trial. And the reason is Ford doesn't want to go to trial because it's really embarrassing. And the families of victims don't want to go to trial, really, because even when you win, let's say, $25 million, this has happened, you know, Ford will just appeal, and they lock it up in appeal after appeal after appeal. And if you're a family and you need money to pay for someone's health or someone's medical rehab, or if you have someone who's been crippled, like the person I read about in this book, you need to have your medical expenses covered immediately.
That's Donna.
Ford drags it out until you have to basically settle for a fraction of that amount.
And you know what's the saddest part of all, and I'll leave with this statement. We're coming into the holiday season now with the Christmas and us. You're going to see the NTSB lining up with all the law enforcement, CHPs. We're looking out for you. You know, we're looking out for you. Forcing people into these, being pulled over because you're suspicious for not having your seatbelt done. We can't address your tires or the rollover or the fires, but if you don't have your safety belt, we're going to look and make sure you don't have an empty can of beer there, because America's going to die because of your can of beer and your safety belt. And I'm not yes, safety belt should be on, but then people aren't dying for safety belts. If your safety belt was unclicked and your car rolls over, yeah, you may die.
Let me tell you a story that backs your point up perfectly. I'll tell you two stories. One is a woman named Donna Bailey.
Thanks, Ben.
Okay.
Oh, thanks, Ben. I'm sorry. But number one, there is a woman named Donna Bailey who was a passenger in a Ford Explorer, and they were driving to go mountain climbing in Texas. And the Ford Explorer rolled over, and when they found the Explorer, the roof had crushed in so far it was touching the back of her seat. She was wearing her safety belt. But, you know, Ford designs these safety belts that they have an 8-inch give. So when you're turned upside down, it gives 8 inches, so her neck was flush against the roof when it came down. It snapped her neck, broke it, and now she's a ventilator-dependent quadriplegic. The next story I'll tell you is another person who was wearing her safety belt. Her name is Jana Fuqua. She was on her way to a St. Louis Cardinals baseball game. She was cut off by a sports car, and when the paramedics found her on the highway, she had been partially ejected through the sunroof, still in her seatbelt, and now she's a vegetable.
And let's go to Kevin here in SoCal. Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi. Listen, of course you guys are scaring the death out of me because I have an F-150, and that's my only question. What about the 150? How's the tires and the roof and all?
That's you're talking about the
truck.
That's a truck. That's a different. That's really a different issue, isn't it?
Well, so you know what? Pickup trucks do have a higher rate of rollover than passenger cars. But they have a much lower rate than SUVs, particularly the Ford Explorer. And so I don't know what kind of tire you use, but, you know, I mean, if you're using a good quality tire and you properly inflated it, you know, I mean, it is true that pickup trucks do roll over more often than, you know, let's say station wagons or sedans, you know, but it's not the plague that the SUV is.
I have the original tires. They've got 54,000 miles on them. Yeah,
well, I can't tell you. I mean, I can't really diagnose, you know, your tires. But I would say that you know, if you have 54,000 miles on them, it might be time to bring them into your shop and have them checked, and maybe it's time to get a new set of tires. You know?
And do not underinflate them. That's one of the big things.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. I think for the F-150, I may be wrong, but I believe the PSI is 35 pounds.
It's about that, yeah. 35,
38,
somewhere. Yeah,
or 32 or 35 or something like that. Uh-huh. So, you know, I mean, again, I know that pickup trucks do have an elevated risk, but it's not like the SUV.
Okay,
and
thanks
so
much.
There's a reason for that, because pickup trucks have to have a higher center of gravity.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go to Jim calling from Salinas. Hi, Jim, are you there?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to differ with the guest. It was my recommendation at an annual meeting of the California State Automobile Association, which is directly responsible for the seatbelt law that we have here in California.
Right.
So I will take responsibility for that law.
Excuse me, I'm not saying that people shouldn't wear safety belts. I'm saying that in a Ford Explorer, if you're in a rollover, your seatbelt may not save you.
Yeah, but I think that it needs to be said that the odds are better that you're a dead person if you don't have the seatbelt. Yes?
Absolutely, but, you know, absolutely. I would never said that someone shouldn't wear a safety belt. That would be crazy. What I am saying is that even if you do wear your safety belt in a Ford Explorer and you roll over, the safety belt may not save you.
And I think, Jim, the point that was made, the Ford vehicles are so poorly built that if you just take them, turn them upside down and lower them down without any force at all on the roof, it'll simply cave in. So if you've got a seat belt on, it's not going to save you for sure. Okay, what we need are better cars. Good seat belts, fine. What we need, though, are protection for our people. And you got to have a roof that'll hold up with a rollover, but then they shouldn't be rolling over. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
And you won't get any argument from me, I don't think, or Adam, about the importance of safety belt. Congratulations for getting the bill through. Let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, I want to ask if these defects are primarily on American-manufactured cars rather than the overseas versions?
No, because the Isuzu Rodeo has a pretty horrible rollover rate, too. They've had a lot of trouble. And, you know, the Toyota 4Runner has had problems. I mean, a number of these vehicles... You know, basically, I mean, my rule of thumb is if you're riding in an SUV and the automaker, whoever it is, recommends 26 PSI, it makes me suspicious.
All right. Now,
the Fords now, are these American-manufactured Fords or are they overseas Fords?
No, these are American-manufactured, aren't they?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Where were the cars built? The Ford.
The Ford Explorer?
Yes.
Ford Explorer is built a lot of places. I mean, obviously in different factories in America mostly. What I was saying is that foreign automobile makers also have a rollover problem, and so does the Chevy Blazer, by the way.
All right.
And is that American-made or foreign?
What, the Chevy Blazer?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know particularly which factories make the Chevy Blazer. I didn't research that.
But, Mike, if you read the book, it's the design, and the engineers knew that this was a problem, and they kept saying, there's going to be a problem with this, and the people in management said, oh, well, let's see, we'll use a smaller tire, we'll underinflate it, and they would do... They wanted to do this as cheaply as possible. Apparently, this was the frame that had been used with the Ranger, and they wanted to use the same frame. They didn't want to redesign it. Is that right, Adam?
Yes, they used the Ford Ranger pickup truck suspension system, and they wanted to use the same factories that they made that car at. And really what they did was they designed a car that was, you know, if you look at an old Ford Explorer and look at an old Ford Ranger, they're identical from the front up. The only difference really is the cabin.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
No, that's all.
Okay, thanks very much. Well, as you tell this story across America, Adam, what sort of response are you getting from people? Are you doing quite a few radio programs on it?
Yeah, the response has been overwhelming. I mean, I think people are kind of surprised at the extent of the problem, and I think that people are really, they really feel heartbroken when they read about people like Donna Bailey, whose life was inexorably changed because of this. And, you know, in general, when I do these radio shows, I'll ask, you know, the callers, someone to call in and tell me your Ford Explorer rollover story. And you know what? And I'll also address audiences where I'll talk about the book. And invariably, someone will come up to me afterward and tell me, you know, I was in a Ford Explorer rollover accident. Or my cousin was in one. My sister was in one. My brother was in one. It's almost like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, only it's in the Ford Explorer.
Well, now, do they ever recall it? Are they still out there?
The Ford Explorer?
Yes, uh-huh.
There are 3 million or so of these Ford Explorers out there. Finally, in 2001, the 2002 model, actually, Ford improved the vehicle and brought in an independent rear suspension, and they widened the vehicle enough. And so I don't think you'll see the same extent of the problem, though it's too early to tell. But, you know, you still have, as I said, about 3 million of these Explorers out there that were made between 1990 and 2001 that are built the old way.
And what's really, this has taken a tremendous amount out of Ford, hasn't it, as far as the recalls and all? My understanding is they're losing money.
Well, they're losing money for a lot of reasons, but I think that definitely the whole Ford and Firestone debacle really hurt them. And, you know, they've had a quality problem for a long time, and I think that American consumers are tired of buying Ford. And, you know, they always say Ford stands for found on roadside dead.
All right. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. I hope maybe we get you on some of our other programs. The book is Tragic Indifference. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, Dr. Stan here, and I just want to remind you, we are having our program tomorrow out of the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and we hope to see many of you there. And we, of course, are going to have all of our, so many of our books and the other items there, and some really great programs. But we hope that many of you out there will want to get some of the other products that we carry, such as the Miracle 2 soap products. Miracle 2 soap products, we can't make any medical claims for them. We can just tell you that a lot of the people who use them tell us they've really helped them in many, many ways. Some people say it helps acne. Some people say it helps skin rashes. Some people says it helps their digestive tract. And all we can do is suggest you try the products and see if they will be beneficial to you. Now, they're a soap, a moisturizing soap, which I've used for several years, and the scalingness on the elbows, which I used to have, just isn't there any longer. And there's a gel, and there's a lotion, and there is a neutralizing solution, which very alkaline, highly mineralized solution. If you'd like to know more, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, or you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to get an introductory offer of these products, we think they're good and we wouldn't carry them. And so if you'd like to know more about the Miracle 2 soap products, again, the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we also suggest people seriously consider getting Alamax. It's an active garlic, it's allicin, the active ingredient in garlic is there, and we know garlic is good for your blood pressure and cholesterol, for your thinning your blood, for fighting infection. If you'd like to know more about Alamax, why not call 866-405-4000? That's 866-405-4000 right now. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there across America will feel that our message is important, that you're going to hear things that you're not going to hear elsewhere, and we're going to put things into its proper perspective. How do we understand what Adam was saying about the tragic indifference? We're living in a world without any moral fiber in it at all. Society has to have faith, and it has to have a sense of right and wrong, and we've lost that here in America. And of course, when faith dies, society dies. When religious foundation dies, why, society dies. And we are in a dying society, and unless there is a religious revival, a third great awakening in America, and then the freedom we inherited from generations past will be lost. And so we hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We have about 60 outlets every week, and that includes shortwave and radio and internet and satellite, but they're all expensive. And it's the faithful support of the people who believe in what we're doing month in, month out that allows us to do what we're doing. We hope many of you out there will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And when you do, you get our four best tapes of the month. You get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you're helping us do what we do. 5 hours every day, and then we do programs on the weekend as well. Our program goes to 35 different stations, and then we have another program we do on top of that at least once a month. So we have a unique opportunity to reach people with a message they're not going to hear from the mainline press or from the establishment conservatives or the establishment liberal commentators. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, you can get it at the same telephone number. The latest number, latest newsletter goes into the background of anti-Semitism. Where is it coming from? Why are we suddenly hearing and reading about this wave of anti-Semitism that is sweeping across America, indeed the world? Well, I think maybe you'll understand much better after reading the November Radio Liberty newsletter. And then we, of course, hope many of you will go to our website, which is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can find all sorts of books there and videos and four tape sets. And they make wonderful gifts for your friends or for your relatives. Or you could simply get them a subscription to the Radio Liberty newsletter for a year. Anything that you get, of course, is the profit is used to keep us on the air. So our website is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our radio programs 5 hours a day, either there or through the various networks we're on. You can pull down our archive programs. You can pull down our newsletters, and we encourage you to copy those and help us to get them out across America. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our website. We hope that you'll tell them about these programs. In fact, even call your local station manager and ask them if they'd be willing to put the program on to carry any one of our programs. And this will really help us. But it will help people to begin to get the truth, the information that they will not get from other sources. So if you believe in what we're doing, why, encourage others to listen to the programs, encourage them to go to the website, and then encourage your local radio station to consider carrying our programs. And then this is the time when we want to remind you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, cultural, ideological, education, economic battlefield, and we have real problems in America. We have a failing economy, and despite everything you are hearing in the media, if you look at the real figures about this wonderful resurgence of profit, that's our next newsletter. Did you realize that we actually had a 30% increase in profits in the last quarter? Well, let me, of course, take you into the background of those figures, and there's as fraudulent as a $3 bill. This is a jobless recovery. We're shifting our factories, our jobs overseas. We're redistributing our wealth. The one thing is they don't want the American people to know what's really going on. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.